saw before. Now she's moving on.
Welcome, welcome. This is Simply King Podcast. It's your boy Rodney Perry King himself. I'm back at the desk like I never left. Really, I was just being a little bit lazy and was like, the setup is here. It's good lighting. Let's make it moody. Let's make it happen. So we are back. We are back. And I was feeling like, you know, a lot of things happening in pop culture. So and my weeks have been way busier than expected. You feel me? But I got a lot of things that I'm trying to work on to put out that are way more curated and not so trapped in time, I guess, if you will. But I think I always try my best to try to find that through line of, you know, doing something that won't just be, oh, you I know exactly that was April 1st, 2024 when he did this. I don't ever want to create any piece of content where that's the vibe, that's the feeling. You know what I'm saying? We are yet again entrenched in another world, taken over by Beyonce. I certainly gonna talk a little bit about that, give you my kind of, you know, quick review of Cowboy Carter. I'm gonna talk a little bit more in reference to my Emphasis on Ghetto episode that I put out 2 weeks ago. Got a few things I wanna, you know, kind of add on to that statement, add on to that, you know, episode. So we're talking a little bit more about Black acceptance. And I wanna talk about the ongoing phenomenon of what I like to call whataboutism. Whataboutism. It's weird, it's silly, but we're gonna get into it. This is Simply King. So let's us get right into the Vibe Minute. Today's Vibe Minute is going to be inspired by this new Cowboy Carter album, right? So in observance of the new Beyonce album, I listened to it. I actually already put my thoughts out. I wasn't bashed about my thoughts. So I kind of believe that I got a pretty decent opinion about it. But it is what it is. If you disagree, let me know in the comments. But I feel like I was fairly fair about it. Now, I'm from Tennessee, which is obviously, you know, very much seen as like the home or the headquarters of country music, if you will, in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm not from Nashville, to make that specific, but I'm from Tennessee. So I've always grown up around country, or what I probably didn't even recognize to be country at so many moments and times, because it's just, you know, it just always has been. But I grew up on it. So I definitely have a particular, you know, framework of mind of what that sonic sounds like. So this Beyonce album, I think that the fact that she primed all of us to kind of listen to a country album, I think was a choice. To add on to the, you know, kind of this being kind of like a, I'm gonna show y'all, you know, talking about the CMAs type of thing, to know that that's kind of where the inspiration for a part of the inspiration for the album. I think she would have honestly, from a marketing perspective, and for people to not go into it with a certain type of expectation, I think it would have been better if she just would have put out this album on some, like, I just want to have fun. I never, you know, played into some genres that I love, and I really want to give, you know, homage to some people that I love and grew up on listening to, my inspirations that I haven't been able to tap into because of other, you know, creative directions. So I want to do something for y'all that's very conceptual, but very much me. Here it is, Cowboy Carter. You know what I'm saying? People would have still got on the Yeehaw agenda. People would have still been down for whatever, because to me, if you find yourself liking the latter part of the album, maybe like the last 8 tracks of the album, because there's about 27 individualized tracks, probably about 5-ish interludes. So it's, I would say, if you find yourself liking the last 5 songs of the album, I don't think you were looking for a country album from Beyonce. That's really my hot take, is I don't think that you were really genuinely looking for a country album. I think the album itself is great. All the vocal performances from not only Beyonce, but her guest appearances and all the features that she had, I think everybody came and brought their own. Her version of Jolene was great, but I think it was certainly overshadowed by some of the original content, being things like my favorite, Bodyguard, you know, featuring, you know, produced by Rafael Sadiq, Two Most Wanted, Two Hands to Heaven, Tyrant was good, you know, But I'm thinking about all these things, feeling like some of these songs don't really feel country to me. And I think if you actually listen to the album, listen to the interludes, understand the pacing and the sequencing, that was intentional. So to me, it's kind of like, okay, so maybe it's because I think of, you know, certain things as things that are sequential. And when they are sequential, they're going to kind of stay with a particular theme. And because she kind of lost the plot or lost the theme or intentionally lost the plot and lost the theme to a certain degree, is really interesting to me. And I think that for those traditional country lovers that probably can imagine a Beyonce, a really genuinely 100% sonically sounding country album from Beyonce, I don't think they really got that. I think they got definitely country inspired album, but not a country album. You feel me? Might be a controversial take, but I'll stand on it. I think the album is solid. I think the album is good. But I do believe that, you know, if you like everything after the Linda Martell show, if you like everything after the Linda Martell show interlude, I believe, you know, towards the end, you weren't looking for a Beyonce album. You were looking for something to, you know, just shake, you know, to vibe to, something that was just new, good music. You feel me? And that's okay. Doesn't make it bad, but I don't think that that's what you was looking for, personally. But I think it's going to work. I think it's going to work for everybody it works for. I think the Yeehaw agenda is still progressed. I think people who want to feel like, oh, this is a I like country now type of thing, go crazy. And shout out to Shaboozy. Shout out to Tana Adele. Shout out to Brittany Spencer. Shout out to all those, you know, folks who got a good, nice spotlight, because this is definitely going to propel their careers. And this is a big, big deal. So 11 Cali, too, I believe, is a writer on one of those tracks. I don't know which one. I can't remember which one. Shout out to you, bro. You did your thing. Love your music. Glad that you're getting even more recognition. But I do have a question for the Vibe Minute. And I would say, what is a song? What is a country song? If y'all really country heads like that, you know what I'm saying? Y'all country heads now. Maybe it's done got into your algorithm. Maybe you already was on top of it. What is a country song that you love? Let me know. You know what I'm saying? Let me know in the chat. Let me know in the comments. Reply to this tweet. Reply to wherever you're seeing this on and let me know what's your favorite country song. Mine, and I believe it's called What Hurts the Most by Rascal Flatts. Yeah, let's get into it.
Sets me, there are days every now and again I pretend I'm okay, but that's not what gets me. What hurts the most was being so close and having so much to say.
And that was your Vibe Minute, okay? Now let's get into the main monologue of the episode. So I wanted to give some slight corrections, or not even corrections, a retraction or just additional perspective that I think I didn't have from statements that I made in my Emphasis on Ghetto episode. I had a segment on that episode where I talked about Amanda Seales. Now, just yesterday, there is a podcast called Ole and Friends, and shout out to Marquise Richards, Marquise Devon, who was featured on there, and he was featured on there with honestly an incredible panel, and they discussed obviously this kind of judgment, this harsh judgment on Amanda Seales being seen as unlikable, while they're simultaneously kind of platforming, Black people are platforming Candace Owens. Very interesting episode. I highly suggest for y'all to listen to it. I'll definitely make sure to link that in the description of this episode that you can tap into that. It's some great viewing, some great perspective. Antoinette, in that particular episode, is the person I think I aligned with the most, thinking about my previous episode, Emphasis on Ghetto, because I really judged Amanda Seales in a way that, to me, I was speaking from a context of how people may perceive her statements of, you know, a frustration. And I think that I didn't want that to come off like I'm thinking like Black women can't complain. That's really the correction that I really want to point out. I don't ever want to make it seem like Black women can't state what it is that's wrong. And I believe I was as fair as I could be in that episode, but I can understand in hearing back and not having all the information. And also, I put that episode out before all those articles came out. All those articles came out throughout the week. And I did not expect that. I'm thinking that I'm pointing out a very simple story that could potentially be just a really good, you know, piece of content. But the fact that, you know, there was Black media that pretended, you know, that really just piled on Amanda Seales, I don't think she really deserved that. And I think that, to me, I think that that type of, like, you know, intentional journalism can be used for other measures, especially for people who do way worse things. Kind of judging if a Black woman is likable and making that a whole article, I don't think really deserves that much shine, to be quite honest. I feel like that feels more like a you know, a conversation that we can have amongst ourselves, and that really be it. You know what I'm saying? But I also think that it's a greater conversation to be had when we are questioning her likability, but also still making space for so many other people who have, to me, a very skewed sense of likability, which I really wasn't even kind of questioning her likability, but more so wanting to make a statement on, like, why somebody like Amanda Seales, it isn't accepted in all spaces and places when she gives her opinion. And that there should be some type of awareness that should be brought up to the surface. And I get it. Like, she's, you know, very much somebody who's passionate about what she's passionate about. But I think that a lot of people just don't buy it, because I think a lot of folks, a lot of Black people specifically, do not like feeling like they're being talked down to or feeling like anything into that sort. But I also think that a lot of those people probably weren't even supporters of her in the first place. So that's the, you know, the kind of weird thing about that, in my opinion. But I want to say that I do believe that Amanda Seales deserves to have all the opportunities be platformed in various different ways. But I also think that the nuanced part of that is that to be for the people and to present questions that are hard for Black people, I think that that has to be still brought into awareness, that the pushback that you receive, the pushback that you get, are from people who aren't prepared to really do that same work as you. And I think Amanda's prepared to, like, put her career on the line based off of her opinions and her morality, to stand 10 toes on the opinions that she has on certain things. And I think that that's honorable. I think that that's good. And I think that that's okay. But I also think that other people aren't going to follow that. And so just so happens is those other people are people who are decision makers at these various different entities. You know what I'm saying? I.e. Essence, i.e., you know, NAACP awards and so on and so on and so forth. They're not thinking of you because you're not aligned with them, because they may think that you're going to come through and make people uncomfortable, if you will. Even though I think specifically for Essence and all these other things, I think, you know, it definitely can be investigated at how much they make space for people who are violent against women and violent against these other people, violent against so many different people within our community. And they still make space for them, because I think that that's where we can, you know, really genuinely have an even deeper conversation. But if you got, like, if you got beef with folks, personal issues with people, all those different things, I think that that's where shit gets a little bit more nuanced, because then it's not just about your perceived likability as a, from a PR perspective. You got individual beef with people. You got individual, you know, issues with folks. I think that that's a little bit weirder. I don't know if people can, like, stand in front of those arrows that you received when that's what's going on. You know what I'm saying? But I don't think that people should pile on and bash you for those things either. I think that if you got personal things, those things are personal. Even if they're from a business context, those things still are amongst you and the entities they're amongst, and they could be squashed, figured out, or there should be grace in those situations in some way, shape, or form. That's how I feel about it. But being held up from not getting certain opportunities and various things like that, I don't think that that should ever be the case, especially when you're talented enough to do the job well. If you're qualified and talented enough to do the job, I think you should get the opportunity personally. But that's just my little correction I wanted to give. But let's get into the main course of the show. I don't have a word for this phenomenon. I like to call it the whataboutism. And it's a phrase that I came up with to identify the moments where there is this deflecting equivalence that is present, instead of actually addressing the situation head on. For example, I don't think that they went, I don't think they should be going as hard as they're going on Bill Cosby when Harvey Weinstein is out here, just still out here doing his thing. A common phrase I think that is, you know, potentially probably heard in many of barbershops across the nation. But the quiet part that said out loud is, instead of actually talking about the violence that both of these men actually enacted and the manipulation that they enacted, the various forms of emotional and physical abuse that they enacted on a number of people by utilizing their status, power, and physical prowess. What? Like, that's never the thing that people are speaking to. That's never the thing that is being spoken directly towards. But what is always and usually spoken towards is always about the specific emphasis on whatever punitive treatment happens when it finally comes out that they did what they did. So to me, it's really interesting because that means that there is an acknowledgement that these men did do something wrong, did do something heinous. But for some reason, the thing that matters the most is that there's some equal treatment in the level of, so if they get off scot-free, white men get off scot-free for doing things that black men do as well, and so on and so forth, they should be treated the same. That's what we care about. That's what we care about the most, regardless of the people who are involved in these situations, regardless of the survivors of these particular abusive exchanges. It's strange. And it's strange because Cosby only served a few years in jail while Harvey Weinstein is very much still in prison to this day. And I think that a lot of people would assume, because of, you know, I understand statistics, black men and black people are, you know, certainly, you know, have harsher sentences and various things like that. And that's been a thing for a long time. I get that and I understand that. But the fact of the matter is, I don't think that that's how that works. Like, I don't think that that's how we should approach that. I would love to point out and redirect the energy back to something that's happening currently. And what's crazy right now is we have this ongoing situation with Sean Diddy Love Combs, who, you know, in recent news has had not only his LA home, his New York home, and his Miami home raided by Homeland Security. But we started out 4 months ago solely seeing him as a alleged powerful sexual deviant that harmed his long-term partner, Cassie. So basically he became damn the black Jeffrey Epstein in a week. Where he is, you know, and it's no laughing matter. It's just like kind of ridiculous, to be quite honest. Because we're talking about in this investigation, he's being investigated on sex trafficking, drug smuggling, sexual misconduct, potentially involving minors, and the list goes on. The first thing I see immediately as this becomes a story. Had to adjust some things. It was loud as hell outside. Nevertheless, here we go. So when it comes to this Diddy situation, as soon as this story came out, this new news came out about his homes being raided, the first thing I see I immediately see from several black male celebrities. They jumped out there and said, did the whataboutisms, stating that Diddy is a pillar of the black community. He's one of our billionaires. He's a leader. It's funny how motherfuckers always talk about when niggas are going down or when they in trouble, they then become just MLK all of a sudden. I don't know how the hell that happens, but that's what it is. This nigga's known for literally, you know, being a party animal, promoting, you know, artists that very much talk about selling drugs, violence, and various other things, but he's a pillar of the community, though. Got you. Nevertheless, and it's always the thing that they kind of are stating now is that, you know, they always trying to bring down a black man. And I think that that's interesting because I think that that comes by way of a lot of different things. I feel that a lot of black people are under the impression that there is this genuine cabal of whites that are like cherry picking year by year by year, few years in a row. Few years, always, they are always coming for the quote unquote legacies of black men. I want black men to understand something. Potentially, these niggas was terrible the whole time. The whole time. R. Kelly, P. Diddy, Bill Cosby. And the facts of the matter is we have proof. We have stories of transgressions, things that are questionable, that are early on statements that we can find for each and every one of these niggas that have quote unquote went down because they all was buying some type of channel, you know. I never really understood why that was the reaction. It's funny though because I think that, you know, it's funny how niggas become paralegals when things like this happens. First, they turn the niggas into MLK, and then they become paralegals being like, he's innocent until proven guilty. This man isn't charged with anything. I think y'all are throwing him away a little too fast. Y'all are putting it away. This is Puff here. I think he's done enough and deserves enough respect that we should need to wait for things to come out because y'all don't even know why they doing this. Actually, he did, you know, sue Diageo for their deal. Maybe it's the liquor coming. It's big liquor coming after Diddy. I highly doubt it. Highly doubt it. I think people with a lot of money try to do more things to get more money. I think people who are seeing particular opportunities, regardless of how legal or illegal it is, they want to get it. That's just what it is. That's just who the people are. I don't think it has nothing to do with that. And when it comes to the sexual nature of things, I think that that's power. I think that the reasons as to why men, not even just black men, men of affluence, access, power, and money love to exploit, manipulate, coerce, and bend their will to make people do things to satisfy their own sexual proclivities, whatever they are. Whatever they are. I want everybody to understand something. The worst thing that comes out of this whole Diddy situation is not the fact that we might be revealed that he might be a little bit bisexual, that he might be a little bit queer. It's not the worst thing. This nigga got sex trafficking charges on his name, on his jacket potentially. Sexual misconduct with minors on his jacket. Come on now. Violently drugging and abusing people. Come on now. It's getting weird. It's getting weird at this point. And like, think about what you're defending. Like, genuinely think about what it is that you would love for it to not be true. And you're going to defend it to the death, to the end of the earth. You're going to defend this shit. It's goofy, personally. The consistent protection on so many black people coming to defense of the black celebrities, specifically black male celebrities, as written in this Root article titled "The Secret Reason Why Some Black People Defend Diddy and Other Celebrities." And I'll link that in the bottom of the description. And I'll quote, give you one quote, the conspiracy. against Blacks contingent is annoying, but they represent a broader psychological concern that many Black folks also harbor. Our fear is losing the handful of icons we have. Why are we so attached to these niggas? Genuinely think about that. Why are we so attached to these niggas? They have already shown us that they don't really care about our community in various different ways. They've accrued a bunch of wealth, and they have not, in turn, utilized that wealth to do what they say, what Du Bois would say the talented 10th would do, and that's bring up everybody else. P. Diddy specifically, if we're talking about anybody, there hasn't been anybody associated with P. Diddy that has gotten and garnered the same or even similar, even a quarter of the amount of wealth that he's been able to garner in his 30 years within the music industry, as well as broader industries such as in fashion, such as in liquor, all these various things that he's been able to transcend through because of his brand. Nobody has been able to make as much money as him, being associated with him in any way, shape, or form. Almost every single group, every single act that he's ever signed or been managed, executive produced, whatever it has been, did not go far. Most of these niggas didn't even put out a sophomore album, either because they died or were in jail, or just flat out just fell off. Just fell off. Loon, jail. Shine, jail. I think Black Rob just passed away. Can I go on? Day 26, we know what happened. The Band, where the fuck are they? Cassie, we see how that went. Can I go on? Where the hell is Mario Winans? Who else? I just can keep going. You can keep just thinking of random people. Lorianne Gibson. She didn't kind of, yes, Lorianne certainly is a talented person on her own, but for some reason, I think that there probably might be a little bit of a scarlet letter because of her attachments to him. Probably the only person who really got out scotch-free, but to be quite honest, I think that he only worked with her on maybe one album, and that was when he was probably at the least of his powers, was Mary J. Blige for her first album. Because I believe it was she was had like some type of deal with Uptown Records. But then you have Kim Porter, dead. You know, Andre Harrell, dead. Heavy D, dead. Everybody who started Uptown Records aren't even here right now. I'll be sure, damn near lost his life. What? Huh? Strange. Very peculiar things that happen around this man, and I understand exactly why people are questioning so much of all the things now, because he's been this very interesting figure that's very much always been known to have these wild parties, which I do believe in the idea that some of these wild, wild parties really just probably had just some niggas kissing in the back somewhere. I don't know. And I think that, not diminishing the things, I think that there certainly were some probably some crazy things that have occurred at a P. Diddy party. But I also believe that a lot of the stories and the descriptions that some people have are more than likely because of their own homophobia. I believe that Black people have this, you know, very specific target on our backs for sure. And I think, you know, there's reasons as to why we systemically have that, because we have gotten so much done with the least amounts of, you know, support. But I don't think that us coming to the defense of every single Black celebrity that gets in trouble is for the greater good of Black people. If honestly, I feel like we're more than anything emulating white people. Roman Polanski, who is basically still on the run from the United States for sexually molesting an underage, I think more than one underage girl, but don't fact check me on that, please. But he's been living his life in Europe. And that man was literally acknowledged at the Oscars. And I believe the same Oscars that Will Smith smacked Chris Rock at, which ultimately, quote unquote, ruined his career. I think that is something to that. It's something about that. It's something really about that. I don't think that we should emulate them, because I think what white people usually do is they either other those people that do extremely bad things and make them into lone wolves, or they dismiss it and don't ever talk about it. That's something that happened once, but we don't really ever talk about that. Hence why so many things we find out that people have done, we are so outraged, because it's like, how the hell is this person still working? How? You know what I'm saying? Think like Mel Gibson, for all people. I believe Russell Crowe actually like put his hands on Azalea Banks at some point. And that shit just went, was here and gone. Not even a real story. And I know he's probably more than likely still working. You feel me? So why would we want to be like them in any way, shape, or form if they have made so much space for people who are violent and harmful to their community? Why would we do that to our own community? I feel like I know black people in real life. And I think that this affects us on a very essential ground level, to be quite honest. I think that so many people have made things like, you know, how do you feel about Diddy? How do you feel about R. Kelly? How do you feel about Bill Cosby, Kevin Samuels, so on and so forth, as basically first date questions to get a real genuine barometer on the type of person that you are. Your belief system. Because if you believe that you can make space for those people and what they did and their transgressions, then it probably means that you're going to be a person that accepts or enacts violence on other people, specifically women, specifically, you know, people who aren't your same identity in some way, shape, or form. And to me, I think it ultimately promotes violence. If you are a person who sees no wrong in some of the things, or feels like there is this, you know, overreaction to some of the things that come about, that they shouldn't be handled in the same way, or we should be given space to like let these people kind of, you know, redeem themselves in some way, shape, or form. To me, I think it's just ultimately saying that you would love to be as violent as white people. And I think it's funny how all the fake pro-black people, who always argue the tearing down of black men, never really speak to the harming of children, adults, and selling drugs. You know, they never really speak down on those things. I find that so funny. Even though people are very conservative, yes, and have all these various things that they feel about certain things, but to me, I think it's kind of ridiculous. I think that what would be a good replacement for whataboutisms would be actual compassion for our community, which means that we take a beat before we react to things. And this is what I wrote. Before you put your tinfoil koofy on, ask yourself, do you know this nigga you dying on a hill for? Do you know him? And do you know him in every single way? And 9 times out of 10, you don't know him intimately. You don't know what this nigga does when he's not around you, even your own friend. So you getting in front of all these bullets for a nigga who has very much been doing all the shit that's being alleged of him. Not even talking about celebrities anymore. I'm talking about just the average nigga. You look crazy. And when it comes out, you're going to look even crazier. You're going to be feel all betrayed, because it's like, nigga, how could you? You my mans. What is that? What really is that? And I continue to read. Are you projecting your idea of black men being infallible? Yes, but not disposable. Now, I think that that's a greater, you know, point to kind of, you know, marinate on. But I really genuinely believe I want more black men to understand that, is that you're projecting this idea that black men, yes, we can do wrong and we have do wrong and we are, quote unquote, you know, flawed in some way, shape, or form. But I also think that we are not above critique, above accountability, above any of those things. If you do wrong to your community or to anyone, there will be repercussions of some sort. In this moment, while you're ready to react, would you be insulting a victim? Consider that. Or anyone that could relate to this scenario within your community. All of these things are identifiers that you're on the wrong side of this situation, of these situations. Believe victims. Don't harass when perceived victims have fabricated stories, because that doesn't even happen that fucking often. Relax, y'all niggas need to relax. Ooh, y'all niggas need to relax. Because I ain't never seen people go come back with so much fervor of like, see, that's what's wrong. I'm waiting on y'all to apologize. Y'all was throwing all these shots on a nigga, and relax. Calm the fuck down. You're mad at people for believing somebody that said that they got harmed by somebody else. Consider that's what you're thinking. You mad at people for believing somebody that said something that it's really, why would somebody lie about it? You know? Especially in the world, in the times that we're living in. Why would somebody lie about that, you know? And I think that, to me, and if men, black men, are capable of becoming millionaires and billionaires, they are also capable of being horrible people. Consider that. Accept that. Let it go. Just let it go. And we all have to hold them accountable and not make them feel comfortable within community, since they harmed our community. There should not be a scenario where you just give niggas a 6 month, you know, kind of like, let's not talk about it, you know, address this shit in 6 months and then let these niggas back in. No. No, that should not be how this is handled. That should not be how it's approached. That should not be any way, shape, or form what it is. To me, I really believe that we can be better people. I think that we have to create spaces and places. And I think that that's the thing that hasn't happened yet. I think that the work that could genuinely happen amongst men could be some dynamic work. We could genuinely come up with the vocabulary, come up with the methods in which, where redemption, where forgiveness, where giving you room to grow after you've done your heinous act is possible. Genuine rehabilitation. You are a product of your environment, bro. You were an ignorant ass child who didn't have that much, didn't have that many options. So you was going into niggas' houses. You was going and hitting the niggas upside their heads. You was being a tyrant. You was being a menace in your society. And people can, and there's, but there's a some room to have grace for you, because you were young. You were influenced. You were manipulated by other people to do their doing. You were in so many spaces and places. And you know, if we could get together, get the things into place, have the real hard conversations, then we could genuinely save some of these boys before they become men and have to deal with even harder work to, you know, to come back from that. For you to, for there to be some type of prevention methods, some type of prevention methods of violence, a genuine reduction of harm. We have to talk about these things. We have to talk about how niggas, y'all scared of niggas too. A big part of what makes Diddy, Bill Cosby, R. Kelly, all these people truly, truly were able to do so much of what they did. People always say because of the talent or because of the, you know, them being able to continuously produce certain things. No, it was fear as well. These niggas had power. People were afraid that they could potentially do something to affect their lives in some way, shape, or form. So people complied, period. That is what it is. That is what it is. I don't want to hear anything else. That's what it is. So we got to reduce harm. We gotta push back on the things. We have to support each other and let it be known, like, hey, my nigga, if that's what your boss, if that's who you working for is doing that, you don't got to worry about that. Let that shit go. And we can lean in on each other. The fact that men are the ones who are, quote unquote, making all the fucking money and doing all the fucking things, but are still without mentors, without help, without assistance, without community, says so much as to why there's this real interesting calling out and longing for people who happen to be seen as folks who have won the game of capitalism. That's why you're so protective of black billionaires and black celebrities as a whole, because you would love to be in that position to where you could be in control of something now. Just some food for thought. I know. But let us send it on. So, today's Send It On is, I wrote this down because I want to just continue to give you guys some food for thought, something to think about. And that's a simple action, if you ask me. When something happens to a black man, you can be fair, always. But you can't circumvent accountability. You can't. Because even if the courts and the powers that be will allow them to be free, they still have to answer to their community. You still got to answer to that community. Because the fact of the matter is this victim who has given proof, has stated the story outright of what has happened. And the court system is all about proving things without a shadow of a doubt. So that means all you need is a little wrinkle of doubt to make this case into something that maybe they'll void or go against in some way, shape, or form. Even though the evidence is there, even though there's proof that you had some type of interaction with this survivor, you still got to deal with your people. If you want to be at home, you got to deal with your people. A lot of y'all opt out of coming back home. But also, unfortunately, a lot of people make space for you to always come back home. It's food for thought. That's all. It's food for thought. That has been the episode. I hope y'all enjoyed. Make sure that you subscribe anywhere that you can listen to the podcast. If you don't know, you should know. You can follow me everywhere at Kings_Memoirs. That's Kings_Memoirs. You can follow the podcast at Simply King Pod. And also, you can check me out every Thursday, tentatively right now, it's only on Thursdays, at the Vibe Hour on Station Head, giving you the vibes, curating you the vibes you didn't even know you needed. You feel me? Get with me. Get in with me. You feel me? I appreciate y'all for checking me out. Be back next week with more content. This is Simply King. I'm forgetting my own wrap up. This has been the Soulfully Conscious Podcast with some humans simply being humans. I've been Rodney Perry, and this is Simply King. Peace.
Girl, this world is dark and cold. We should not be alone.